Welcome in, Lineup Logic. You are listening to the live stream for NFL Week 6. I'm Mike Alexander. With me, Josh Fern, as usual. Fern, what's up, man?
Oh, man, not much, Mike. Not much. Just glad it's Friday. Long week at the office, but we're here once again, Week 6.
Yes, sir. Interesting week on tap here. A lot of the favored plays are kind of missing with the Sunday night, the Monday night, the Thursday night games. And guys like Todd Gurley that are on it are hitting, the high points of the pricing spectrum. So a lot to unpack this week. We talked about before we went on here, kicking it off with a little does defense matter talk. That's the buzz in the industry at the moment, kicked off by Josh Hermsmeyer, the Air Yards guy. You may know him. He basically came out and said defenses don't matter when it comes to projecting offense. Yeah, the offense is all he cares about. So I'll give you my take. You give me your take, and we'll see where we stand. I understand what he's saying. Like, if you try to incorporate defenses into a model, you're not going to have any better results than you would have had just focusing on the offense. Things like targets, things that are slightly more projectable. Obviously, he's very big on air yards. Those are projectable. They tend to have a strong correlation game to game and year to year. So I get where he's coming from. I also get the backlash he's facing with people saying, if you play the Falcons with James Conner 100 times, you can't have the same outcomes as playing the Eagles 100 times with James Conner. It's just there is a component to that. So, I see both sides. I get what Josh is saying. He came off a little bit abrasive, I think, in putting it out there, but that's his style on Twitter. He gives no F's about anybody else's opinion. I tweeted it out. The two really smart things I saw people put out were Sammy Reed on his timeline. He put out about how this is really similar in his eyes to some of the early metrics for baseball back in like the 80s. When like FIP started becoming popular, and does the pitcher own the stats, what can he do? And at the time, people were coming out with all the pitcher really controls is home runs, strikeouts, walks, everything else, has a fielding dependence to it. And that's kind of similar to what we're seeing here is, we don't understand yet what defense's true role is stat wise, because stats are like in their infancy stage when it comes to the NFL. What's your take on it, Fern? Where do you fall on the DDM spectrum?
Yeah, I definitely am a strong believer in using analytics, putting a lot of emphasis on stats. But at the same time, not drowning in them. And to an extent, I agree. Like, defense doesn't matter in the big part of the bell curve. The large portion of NFL defenses, some are better than others, some are worse than others. But, from a fantasy perspective, it's negligible. On the tails, though, the extreme ends, defense matters. On the tail ends of any like group of data, the tail ends matter. And so in the sense of NFL defenses, your extremes, the elite defenses, and every year you're not going to have like truly elite decade best defenses. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of things, you're not going to always have truly epically horrible defenses. So I think that's like the key is if a defense compared to like historically speaking, stands the test of recent years, like the last 5 years, the last 10 years, like this defense is like, early 2000s Ravens, like early 2010s Broncos, et cetera. I mean, that's when I really, really, really take pause. But, a good defense is not going to completely deter me, especially in tournaments, from using an outstanding, talented player. In fact, it would attract me more for using that player, because I think talent in the sense of offensive players can supersede, you know, a good defense. So I'm not going to get scared away by like an above average good defense, but you know, historically speaking, when we have an elite defense, one of the top five in the last decade, for example, like that's when I really get scared off. So I guess the short of it is like, you got to be really, really damn good as a team defense to scare me away. Not really worried about cornerback matchups. You know, the one thing that really terrifies me is, do they have a couple of elite edge rushers? And that's what really I think matters ultimately when we're looking at DFS plays, is can they rush the quarterback? And if they can to an extremely elite capacity, then, you know, I'm a little worried there. So that makes sense.
It was an interesting case study this week, because we had Jacksonville facing Kansas City, and that was kind of the impetus for this all, you know, which side's going to win out. And I think you would say offense won out, but like the studs didn't give you weak winning performance. Like Mahomes actually had one of his worst lines of the season. And like they went up early. So, you know, Jacksonville was playing from behind. So kind of it didn't really give us the answer I think most people were hoping for. But I think you hit on a really good point. The ends, you know, those top three defenses, those bottom three defenses, those are the ones that you can make a personal adjustment for. You know, and ultimately you're the best analysis tool out there. You're going to take the inputs that you can come up with, put them through your brain, and you're going to come up with your plays. So having a good process is really the foundation for me, and looking at good source material, and you'll make good decisions over the long run, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think that, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, what type of player are you? You know, if you're strictly a cash player, you know, then there's really no sense in getting cute and trying to, you know, jam in a talented player against a good defense, you know. But if you're a big tournament player, you know, like, I mean, I'm pretty much, you know, zero cash. I'm all about tournaments. And that's one of my favorite things to do, is, you know, identify a high usage, you know, highly talented player, you know, going against a good defense, a perceived good defense, mm-hmm. and just catching that ownership leverage. I mean, just case in point, you know, last night, you know, your Eagles dominated that game, but yep. Saquon Barkley is a generational talent.
Generational spirit is the quote from
I love from that. Coach Sherman. What is a generational spirit? That's like some quote from like a Chinese proverb that was like poorly.
I think he just got caught like flat footed and was like, I kind of wish we had taken a quarterback and that I weren't losing most of the games this year. Although I'm not sure a quarterback would have changed that.
Yeah. But yeah, so I guess sometimes talent just wins the day, but it's again, it's like, it's all how you play. If you are trying to mitigate risk, then yeah, you definitely want to consider the opposing defense, but you know, if risk is something that you embrace, then, you know, run into the storm, so to speak.
Yeah. And another good angle I saw put out there is, it's hard to get better than what Vegas is projecting. And, you know, take Bears Dolphins, for example. The Dolphins are projected for 19 points in that game. Like there's production somewhere on that team. You know, they're not going to all put up single digit fantasy days or zeros. Somebody's going to score a touchdown. You know, there might even be three people that score a touchdown. So, you know, that's kind of, I think, where a lot of people are falling back on projection models that obviously rely very heavily with Vegas totals. So. Mm-hmm. But speaking of, why don't we jump into some Vegas totals? You wanted to talk a little bit of line movement and some of what's happened this week.
So just looking at the slate of games, you know, just from an implied total perspective, we've got five teams as of now implied to score under 20 points. Starting at the bottom, we got the Bills, Cardinals, Cowboys, the Dolphins, and the Titans. Are those teams just 100% fadeable? I mean, I'm not touching them in cash, probably not touching them in tournaments, given the fact that I'm a one lineup kind of guy, you know, occasionally three, two, maybe, but typically it's one or three. There's really no reason for me to touch those. So if you're like me and you play limited lineups, you play cash primarily, single entry tournaments, you know, there's really not much to see there. Definitely nothing in the Bills. You know, you could maybe hope and pray with David Johnson or Zeke Elliott. I mean, the Dolphins, I mean, Ryan Tannehill is throwing interceptions like it's his job. And the Bears are just a devastating unit. And then the Titans, you know, I mean, you have no idea what to expect from them. I mean, could they put up some points against the Ravens? You know, anything's possible, but I don't like it against this, at least in the 2018 season, outstanding pass defense at the Ravens boast. So before I look at some higher total games, I don't know if you have any takes on some of these doo-doo implied total teams.
I mean, I feel like David Johnson's a bit of a fade for me. You're counting on touchdown dependency there with probably a very pedestrian stat line. That coaching staff has got zero creativity, especially with him. Like, you look at his next gen stats page and it's just rushes right up the middle for three yards.
So heartbreaking. I saw that tweet. I can't remember who initially sent that out, but I mean, everything was between the hash marks and it was just, it's like,
yeah. I mean, little passing game.
Oh my gosh. It's so sad.
So, you know, that's one that I think is a bit of a trap because his price is good. It's risky. I don't mind Zeke as much. Given that he will get just huge usage and he's got a lot more stability week to week, I think, even in bad matchups.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I guess maybe you might take a flyer on like maybe Corey Davis. But again, like this, when I say that, like that is if you are running, you know, dozens and dozens of
25, 50 lineups.
Yeah. Like there's a threshold that you have to cross before you start considering these players. And if your lineups are in the single digits, there's really no upside. You can differentiate with a team that's implied for greater scoring. But of course, out of these five teams, it's not going to be surprising at all for one guy to score 20 points that's not named David Johnson or Zeke Elliott. Moving up to the top of the totem pole here, I guess, there are five teams implied to score 26 or more points. Leading the pack is Atlanta, 30 points. The Rams are just inching up there at 29, Tampa Bay at 27, and the Bengals and Vikings are both at 26, kind of rounding just to the whole number there. You know, technically the Vikings at 26.8 and the Bengals at 26 on the nose. Just my take on these situations here, you know, I definitely am buying those Atlanta and LA totals. I think that, I mean, the Rams are as much of a lock as you can get for scoring four touchdowns worth of points. You know, will they score four touchdowns? I mean, it's likely going against this perceived decent Broncos defensive unit that is not a good defensive unit.
They're getting thrown up
the offensive team, and then the Falcons just historically against Tampa Bay are as close of a lock as you can get to scoring three to four touchdowns. So before we move into a couple of those other teams there, what do you think about Atlanta and the Rams?
Yeah, so the Rams, I think there's a nice kind of convulgence of factors coming with, you've got them facing the Broncos, who do have like a little bit of a rep as a good defense and at home. I don't think, you know, the Rams are going to be peak Rams like we saw at home against Minnesota, but you know, they just scored how many points in Seattle? 30, which is a tough place to play, and still a defense that has some teeth. You know, they're not what they were, but they're not a pushover. And there's also, you know, 2 to 3 inches of snow in the forecast, which people freak out about weather in DFS. Like, you know, you saw with the Monday night game, everybody was like, oh, scoring's going to be down. And, you know, it hit the over easily without having to really involve fourth quarter scoring. So, you know, you could get some decent ownership on Rams players where, you know, it would have been higher given a neutral field and good weather.
Yeah. Yeah. On the weather. I believe it was Chris Raybon. Might've been Jonathan Bales. It's one of those smart guys that do, you know, big longitudinal studies. And basically the only weather that matters truly in DFS, NFL DFS, is wind, is sustained.
High wind.
That's it. Yep. So for those of you that see rain in the forecast, some snow, I mean, obviously like heavy snow, but that's rare, right? You know? But if you see rain, if you see a little windy conditions, you know, don't really let it deter you from using pieces in that game. I guess one other weather to consider, but now we don't really have to worry about it, is extreme heat. And one of the biggest edges is like if the Patriots are going down to Miami in early September, because historically they've struggled going down to Miami in early September. But I guess that might be more of like a sports betting angle than a DFS angle.
Right. Yeah. You get a little drained there.
It's kind of like stacking in baseball against Steven Strasburg, yeah, pitching in a hot day game. He's used to that mild Southern California.
Right.
So
let's jump into Bucks Falcons. I like the Falcon side here. Like you said, they're the highest total. You know, Matt Ryan is expensive, Julio's expensive, but it comes with some pretty solid floor of production and good upside as well. Julio actually scores touchdowns against the Bucks. I like their peripheral weapons as well. Ridley, Sanu, Hooper, all kind of interesting. On the Bucks side, man, I've been saying it all week. I'm just too afraid of Jameis, especially in game one. Like, everybody thinks that getting him into comeback mode is a good thing and going to equate to points. And it could, it definitely could. It could also equate to just an absolute disaster, because the Bucks spent a good part of last season chasing, and half the year he was awful and just turned the ball over and couldn't connect deep. And then the second half of the year, he was way better at it. You know, you just don't know who you're going to get. And people are like, oh, his price, you know, the scoring, he's a cash lock. Like, that's not the definition of a cash lock to me. Like, Matt Ryan is a cash lock. Like, he's got a way better chance of having a minimum production that's going to win you cash lineups. Jameis Winston could give you like a 12 and sink your entire team. What do you think on Winston?
Oh yeah. And I'm sure, well, I guess, you know, maybe a good way to approach this show is just to get all of the players in this Tampa Bay and Atlanta game out of the way first, and then, you know, do our viewers a favor and not hit softballs with talking about a lot of these guys, break down positions. But, you know, I tweeted earlier that I feel like Cameron Brait and Austin Hooper are two of the easiest fades for me. And then I'll get to Winston in a second. And it's kind of the same mentality here is, well, I guess it's maybe not this exactly the same. As far as tight end goes, I mean, it's such a volatile position. And, you know, as everyone that plays season long knows, is unless you're getting like Kelce or Ertz, you know, or Gronk, I mean, everything else kind of just mushes together. you know, from like the tight end 4 or 5 all the way down to like the tight end 13 or 14. It's kind of mushed together. And the same goes with DFS tight ends is, you know, there's really not a great edge you can get for, you know, going after the chalk tight end because just the variance that's built into the position. It's very rare that you find a tight end that gets schemed into the game plan. And, you know, unfortunately for everybody that has put all their weight behind Cameron Brate and Austin Hooper, the two of them don't really get schemed in purposefully to the game plan. And that's what builds in a lot of that risk.
Yeah, so, I think it was somebody from NumberFire. They put out a tweet with the top percentages, and I guess it was like the Millie Maker or something by tight end each week, and it was just like bust after bust. I think week one it was like decent. I forget who the chalk was week one. Might have been Ertz, but
yeah,
the highest owned the rest of the time. You know, like Ebron in there when he had a dud. Just a bunch of guys that. Like you're trying to be smart and tricky like everybody else, and you end up, you know, just pissing away ownership.
Absolutely. So as far as that chalk goes, I am definitely like it's Friday night. I already know. Like I'm not using Brate or Hooper. Mm-hmm. It's just not a hard decision for me without
only a couple lineups.
Without Ertz, without Kelsey, without Gronk. You know, it's just really not a hard call for me to just go away from that chalk because odds are everything else is going to kind of, you know, mush together and I'm just going to look for an ownership pivot. And I kind of like the fact that, Eric Ebron gets wide receiver 1 targets. So, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but going back to the original point is Jameis. And Jameis is getting so much love, it is extremely uncomfortable for me, given the fact that his price is extremely palatable. The matchup is, I mean, I'm not even going to say it's perceived as good. It is a great matchup. This Atlanta secondary is definitely targetable. But you know what? Like, it's a divisional game. It's just first start back after his hiatus. And I have pause here. Like, I don't think that he's going to put a complete dud out there, but just assuming that, I'm pretty certain he's going to be 15 to 20% owned in a lot of contests. And I just don't see him having that 30 point game in him. I mean, I could see Jared Goff having a 30-point game against the Broncos and him being, you know, mid-single-digit ownership. So, he's more expensive than Jameis, but that pivot and just that proven efficiency is what attracts me more to a lot of these other options. So it's really not that hard for me to imagine fading him. That said, I don't think he's going to put up a complete dud. You know,
yeah, but I see him doing something like 285, 2-2, like two touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
Exactly.
Just like, you know, getting you close, but not close enough.
And the other thing too that you know, worries me a bit is that he's like, I mean, I just said it, but like his salary. Okay. So, you know, and, you know, we'll get to these pieces in a minute here, but there's a lot of high end players that people are going to want to jam in this week. You know, I know Gurley is really expensive. You know, it's the first time we've seen him I think he's 10K on DraftKings. And I think he's 9,500 on FanDuel. I mean, he's super expensive, but I mean, it's still a great play. You know, people are going to want to jam him in. Because he's just a lock for like 25 points every week. Yeah, and people are going to want to jam in Julio and they're going to want to get, you know, Mike Evans in there, perhaps. Like they're going to want to get Melvin Gordon in there, Christian McCaffrey, perhaps. And so Jameis is just going to be that like default, you know, quarterback option. Yep. And it's just, I can see so many avenues that people are going to take that lead them to Jameis. And in tournaments, it's, I mean, I don't see how I can, you know, roster him with full confidence, knowing, like what you said, Mike, that he does have that mediocre 285, 2-2 game that's really not going to blow the doors off of anything. And I just, pivoting makes so much sense to me.
Yeah, I like this game. This game actually worries me as a whole a little bit. I said it on the pod earlier in the week. Like their last four meetings have been pretty ugly. Like, you know, I think the last one was 16-17. Like, it's a divisional game. They hate each other. They play hard. It's hotly contested. So, you know, it's not a lock that this thing goes into the upper 50s points wise.
Yeah, definitely. And on the Atlanta side of things, though,
yeah, I'm good with Atlanta.
Really having a hard time not having Julio Jones on one of my rosters. I know that it's like hashtag Julio's washed up or whatever the hell you want to say. I don't know. There's so much ridiculous, these crazy takes out there that he's like washed up.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see what his ownership is going to be, because there's so many people that can't stand him, but it's such a like natural spot to use.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at ownership projections in a variety of places. And I mean, one of my favorite ownership projections that I like to refer to is the UF Collective. And they have him at 35% on FanDuel. And they're really accurate, very accurate. But I have a feeling that he's going to be lower owned than that. I think that in lower dollar tournaments, I could see Julio being higher owned in the higher dollar tournaments, because I think the sharper players know, like, he's getting these elite air yards. I mean, he's getting elite targets. He's converting, these targets into receptions and yardage. He's not getting in the end zone. And historically speaking, against Tampa Bay, he owns them. Like, since 2014, he averages 26 fantasy points a game against Tampa Bay and 34 a game when playing them at home. I got that from Scott Barrett, and I don't know. It's really hard for me to not have Julio in my lineup. That's my favorite piece in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to have him or Gurley, because they're the guys that can get 25, 30 points on this slate, and without it, you're fighting a battle uphill.
Yeah. Now I do think you can get them both in there. The question is, where can you save in other places? And if we're fading, well, if I'm fading Jameis, and if I'm fading Brait, you know, then it's going to be tricky. But there are a few spots, and we can talk about those as we move on.
All right. Any other games in these high totals that you want to talk about?
Well, there is that Pittsburgh and Cincinnati game. The Atlanta-Tampa Bay game is leading the way. And then the Rams and Broncos and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati are both at 51. The difference, though, is that Atlanta and Tampa Bay, the total has moved up half a point, while the Broncos and Rams have moved down a point, and the Bengals and Steelers have actually tanked 3 points since the open. And you and I were talking before we went live, and it's possible, pretty likely, I think, that Cincinnati Steelers game can be a divisional bloodbath.
Yeah, that's, you know, that tends to happen in that rivalry. The one kind of silver lining for me in that is neither team is really playing defense this season. Like, they're both in a bad place defensively. They're giving up tons of plays, tons of production, and their offenses have been getting it done on the other side. So there's a chance it gets close to that or even hits the over. But yeah, I think you're not seeing a smoke screen with the potential that people are going to target this game and be left wanting.
Yeah, if I'm looking at one of these three games, I'm probably looking first at the Rams. I just really love what Sean McVay does, with just concentrating the production into just a few players. It's such a predictable offense. I mean, not only is it highly efficient, but it's just so predictable. It's extremely unlikely. Like, and when I say extremely, it's like a 1% chance that like Tyler Higbee or some rando joker is going to blow up and have a game.
Right.
Like it's going to go through the big four guys, Gurley and Cooper Kupp and Cooks and Woods. I mean, it's going to go through them. And so it's a very stackable team. I feel like if I'm playing multiple lineups, it's not possible for me to not have a four-man Ram stack. But so that's my favorite way to look at these six teams who are in these high total games is stacking the Rams, getting pieces of Tampa Bay and Atlanta, not really stacking that thing, just getting pieces, definitely Julio. And then I'm not going to fall over myself to roster Cincinnati and Pittsburgh pieces, but those two teams are really interesting. Like I love Tyler Boyd. I love Juju, Connor, Nixon. But I don't know. It's a divisional game, so it concerns me.
What's your least favorite game from a scoring standpoint?
That's a good question.
Jacksonville, Dallas to pick from.
I feel like some people are going to be attracted to this Redskins and Panthers game. I feel like the Panthers side of things, I mean, it's really not, news that, the Panthers side is going to be the favored side in DFS. That Saints Redskins Monday night game, I wouldn't put a whole lot of weight into it. I know that the Redskins are extremely low on the DVOA side of things for stopping the run, but they have a good defensive unit, and I know like Drew Brees and the Saints carved them up like a Thanksgiving turkey, but outside of that, that's been a pretty good defensive unit this year. The Panthers play at a low pace, and so I could see people going after Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey and being disappointed a bit.
And these are two coaches that I think don't mind just playing old fashioned, boring football.
Absolutely.
Like the Panthers scored points last week out of necessity. I don't think that's their preferred route.
Yeah. And then one other team that I could see disappointing people is the Chargers going against the Browns. They're going across the country playing the 1 o'clock game in Cleveland, and the Browns are legit. Like they're a legit football team.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like I know that, it's still like this hangover in people's minds of that they're the Cleveland Browns and they're garbage, but their defense has been pretty solid this year. I know that they had that shootout with the Raiders and, that kind of thing happens from time to time. But I think that they can give the Chargers some trouble. And so, like, will Melvin Gordon get his high usage? Definitely. But I don't think that it is very certain that the Chargers can come over there into Cleveland and, light them up for three or four touchdowns. So I think that could be a little bit of a disappointment as well.
Yeah, I'm interested in that one because I think a lot of people are buying the Browns all of a sudden. And like you said, the West to East narrative too. So I think you could get some solid ownership on guys like Rivers and Gordon. Not going to be my core. Definitely just some people to mix in.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this and then we can move on if you want to, is I, every single week this season, like every week on FanDuel, I've had Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley in my main lineup. And it's probably going to happen again. I just feel like there's such a certainty with those two guys, such a level of comfort with those two guys. And yeah, you know, I've missed out on, you know, like I missed out on James Conner last week. You know, I missed out on Christian McCaffrey running for 180 yards on 20 whatever carries a couple weeks ago. But yes, I do think that the Chargers could somewhat disappoint. I do agree that there's going to be some ownership to be had there on those pieces on the LA Chargers side of things. But yeah, like on FanDuel, it's just so tempting and it's so easy to just jam Gurley and Gordon in every week.
Yep. And then real quick before we hit the positions, Rock wants to know what we think about Wilson Lockett, Baldwin stacks. I mean, it's in London, Rock. I'm not sure if you're aware, but London games just worry me, man. Like there's been scoring, but it's hard to tell who's going to do it and which side. I can't remember either of these teams playing in London recently. So you got that. Like there's the travel, there's the, you know, you're in a new place with new food. A lot of these guys are creatures of habit and everything's just, you know, thrown off for them. So it's not a bad stack, Rock. I think as far as stacks go, but you know, Baldwin only getting one catch last week. That worries me a lot as well, but that could lead to some really nice ownership for you. And you're going to get him where maybe it was just a fluke. He only got the one catch. All of a sudden he gets back to his regular involvement. And he did talk a lot this week about, you know, I believe what he said was any receiver would be disappointed with only one catch. So I thought that was a really good way of handling it. Like, he made it clear he was not pleased, but he didn't call anyone out or make it ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he gets the squeaky wheel treatment. It's possible. But if I'm targeting any pieces in that game, I mean, it all starts with Chris Carson for me.
Yeah.
I think that he's going to ball out. I've got him in a couple dynasty leagues.
He's basically gone 100 yards the last two games.
Yeah,
the Raiders,
you know, you were talking, Mike, about like, you know, old school, like 80s, 90s football, you know, with the Redskins and Panthers. And I feel like going across the pond over to London, you know, playing a cupcake run defense in Oakland, you know, it would behoove the Seahawks to just feed Carson, you know. But of course, you know, Mike James could come in there and I don't know what the hell that's all about, but yeah. I think Davis. Chris Carson is the quintessential bell cow.
Yeah, I would swap Baldwin for Carson in that stack, Rock. Go Wilson Lockett, Carson, because Lockett's been heavily involved. He's scoring touchdowns. They've loved him there ever since they drafted him, and just that freak injury 2 years ago and not being back from it last season really limited him. So
yeah, maybe even Nick Vinette.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know.
As far as TD hunting at tight end, it's not the worst play. Yeah. But let's hit quarterbacks. Give me a couple guys we haven't talked about yet for a QB.
Yeah. So obviously everybody. I mean, I would say the combined ownership on Matt Ryan and Jameis is going to be like a third of the field in a lot of the lower dollar tournaments.
Yep.
I mentioned before Jared Goff. I love Goff. He's so efficient. This offense is just like a well-oiled machine. And again, like in lower dollar tournaments, you know, $10 and under, you know, maybe $5 and under, you know, I could see him being, you know, outside of the top five in ownership, because I think the public still perceives Denver as being a good pass defense, but they're not. This is not a good pass defense anymore. And so I think that is a very targetable matchup there, a nice little stack with Gurley, Goff, and, you know, you pick a receiver. I also, you know, I think Cam is always an option. You know, will the game be boring and low scoring? I think it's likely. I do. However, he just runs the ball so much and his floor is so high. And so I've always, you know, felt Cam has had a little space every week in my player pool. Will I use him every week? No. I mean, I'd probably use him two or three times a year, but he's always got a high floor. And then one more guy that interests me, and then I'll throw it back to you. I guess, I mean, there's really not much. Like, my quarterback pool is really small this week. I kind of like your call about Phillip Rivers. I mean, he's having such an amazing season. He's so efficient this year.
He's good against pressure as well, which the Browns love pressure. Until he's not. There is the occasional game where he just gets planted on his ass and he Marmadukes the ball all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, quarterback, I think this week, quarterback, you just – I mean –
be safe. Yeah.
Every week there's always a quarterback that just comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. There's always a player at every position that comes out of nowhere. I mean, you can bank on talent and you can say, you know, I mean, I don't know about Kirk Cousins against Arizona. You know, Arizona is not a plus matchup for any quarterback this year. They're definitely limiting opposing quarterbacks pretty well. I mean, Andrew Luck against the Jets, maybe, like the amount of volume that the Colts.
Yeah, like I don't mind either guy in that Jets game because like you're about to say the volume that the Colts play with could just equal a lot of attempts on both sides.
Yeah, and that could be a game where you could game stack that game. And I mean, if you're going in like a massive tournament, I mean, that could be like a really sneaky game stack, you know, maybe like Luck and, you know, Eric Ebron and what the hell's Chester Rogers, perhaps. And then maybe like Robbie Anderson and, you know, Isaiah Crowell, like running it back. I mean,
I actually like the other side. I would go, Darnold, Anunua, and Robbie Anderson, and then run it back with somebody like Ebron.
Or what's that? What's the other receiver's name?
Ryan Grant.
No. God, fucking Ryan Grant.
From the Jermaine Curse on the
the Jets. Oh my God, on the Colts, Pierre or some French name. I don't know.
Not sure.
These are not players that I will be rostering because I just don't. I mean, if it was like a single game situation, like sure, but
right.
You know, now we're getting into Jeremy territory, which I wish Jeremy was with us, but I feel like Jeremy is one of the guys that runs like a bunch of lineups. I don't know.
Yeah. And then the one quarterback we didn't talk about that I kind of like, at least from a GPP standpoint, is Baker Mayfield. I think the Chargers defense, you know, they're without Joey Bosa, they've been fairly toothless. They were better last week, but that was at home against the Raiders. Like, everybody's better at home against the Raiders. So, you know, Mayfield, it's only his third start. So, like, he's making strides. He's got a good, you know, crew around him, especially if the Chargers can push the issue a little bit and score some points on their end and force the Browns to keep pace or stay ahead.
For sure. And then, I didn't mean to cut you off, but neither mentioned Roethlisberger or Andy Dalton.
Yeah. Andy scares me.
Yeah. Ditto.
Roethlisberger, you know, you could get him because there's that, you know, Ben is no good on the road narrative, but I don't know. I feel like this is kind of like a James Conner, Joe Mixon game between these two. But let's transition that to running backs. Who do you like at running back, Fern?
Oh man, well, I mean, I love Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon. You know, every week I love those guys.
Team cram them in.
Yeah, jam them in, man. I think TJ Yeldon is going to be really popular this week.
Yeah.
Now,
I wish Sean Lee were back for the Cowboys, because that would be such a trap, I think, with Yeldon. But with no Sean Lee, they're better than they were last year without him, but they're still like they can't cover backs and they get run on a little bit.
right. Yeah. So I do think he's going to be popular. The volume is going to be a little questionable. But I don't think he really needs a ton of rush volume because he's so involved in the pass game
Right.
as well. So I think he's a pretty safe play. So if you're trying to pay down a bit and not get too cute, I think he's a really safe play. And then, you know, I don't want to steal too much of the options here for you to touch on. One guy, I mean, this is not a guy that I'm like considering, but one guy that I'm waiting for him to get right is Jordan Howard.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Where are you?
Yep, yeah, the Dolphins, you can run on them for sure.
So yeah, you can, and he's so freaking cheap. On FanDuel, he's
Yep.
6,200.
And when he blows up big, like 200 and two touchdowns.
Absolutely. Like, what is the deal? Like, it just blows my mind, you know. Maybe
Yeah,
like
it could just be new offense, they're all getting acclimated to each other and the passing game got right last time we saw him. Maybe it's the running game's turn.
yeah, definitely. And you know, I feel like Jordan Howard, oh my God, I just drew a blank on his name, Tariq Cohen. You know, that can be kind of like a situation like, I don't know, like Bilal Powell and Isaiah Crowell.
Right.
You know, where, you know,
Well-worn thunder and lightning.
yeah, and like maybe they are like rosterable on the same lineup in some crazy GPP stat. I don't
Yeah.
know, but one
That's
of the
becoming more popular. Like a lot of people are liking the Gordon Eckler stack because they get such usage.
right.
Cohen Howard could be another one.
Yeah, I used Eckler last week on DraftKings, and he did quite well. And you know, in hindsight, I mean, you could have used them both and, you know, gotten good value out of them.
Yep.
But you know, again, like this is similar to quarterback. Is, I mean, is there someone that's going to pop, you know, down low? There always is. There always is. But
Yeah.
I'm not going to really get too cute here. I mean, the farthest down, like I would go, you know, is probably Yeldon or Mixon. You know, I mean Carson as well, but I'm not interested in Tevin Coleman. I'm not a Tevin
Yeah,
Coleman kind
I've
of guy.
chased him enough this season. Yeah, it's gonna hurt when he does break out, but like
How
I can't
many?
keep
Three
getting.
seasons now.
Yeah, a couple of pay downs I don't mind, especially if you're on a full PPRs. Buck Allen on the Ravens, like, he's just fully involved in that offense, and he's a better price than Alex Collins. And then Carlos Hyde on the Browns. He's got, I think he has 100 rushing attempts to Todd Gurley's 101 rushing attempts, and they're number one and number two. So the Browns are leading on him heavily. He's already got five rushing touchdowns, and a lot of them have been kind of like gimmies, but like that's his role in this offense. So again, if the Browns are moving the ball on what I think is not a good defense, he could benefit.
Yeah, I
Talked
don't
about
see that
Chris Carter.
changing anytime soon. I feel like 2018 is Carlos Hyde's year. I mean, Nick Chubb is probably going to be the man in 2019, 2020. But Carlos Hyde, like, I mean, for the foreseeable future, for the rest of this season, I mean, he's a bell cow back on that offense. I like that call. He's really safe. And one guy that I do like in full PPR, DraftKings. I like Nyheim Hines on Indiana Indy on the Indiana
In
Pacers
Indiana.
on Indianapolis. He has hit the ground running as a rookie
Yeah, huge
at Wake
usage for a
Forest.
guy who's only like 5'7".
Yep. Yeah, and then
rushing the ball.
What do you think? I'm like, I keep looking at like Ronald Jones.
So here's the thing. Everybody's trying to figure out who is the Bucs back to target this Falcons defense with. I don't see it happening. Like Ronald Jones is just not good at football, I don't think. Like he can pop a long run here and there, and that was what he did at USC. Like he had some highlight reel long runs, and you know, he goes out the window if they fall behind, which I think they do. Peyton Barber, like, he's just been so pedestrian. I mean, if they're in the game, okay, you know, he might catch a couple passes too, but I don't know. Like if you're going to build, like I said, if you're building 50 lineups, like you probably want a couple of Barber shares and a couple of Jones shares, but even in a good matchup, just too unpredictable.
Yeah, on the other side of things, though, on the other side, a really...
Ito?
What'd you say?
Ito?
Yes, I think he... I mean, I think it's a really sharp play in a massive tournament because... Yeah. Devontae, I believe, out. Is going to be out.
Yeah. Yeah, so and it's also really encouraging that Smith was involved even when Freeman came back. He had like 20% of the carries, and that was what they – I forget, one of the Falcons beat reporters had reported that was their intention going into the game, was a 40-40-20 split, and that was exactly what they did. So we might see like a 60-40 split or something like that with Tevin Coleman.
And who was the third back there the last couple of years? I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, I forget.
But I do remember him having like some legitimate fantasy performances.
Super long catches.
I'll have to look it up when you're like talking about
something Smith.
But yeah, like there is a path to success for Ito Smith, and he is, I mean, that's as far down salary wise.
He got a red zone carry and a touchdown in that 20% of carries.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, like if you're looking way down low, I'm just kind of scrolling through. I mean, like there's really, I mean, like Duke Johnson is not a thing anymore. Jalen Richard. I mean, Duke Johnson did have that outstanding overtime game-winning drive for them to kick that pathetic field goal.
But like that's where they've waited to use him, like when like he's fresh and the other team is tired. And
yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's not a bad call there to do that. But you know, Mark Walton
had him, but
a role on that team on Cincinnati. You know, Richard. I mean. You know, so yeah, I mean, Ito Smith,
I like that Ito call. I'm going to mix him in for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Might be worth a try.
All right. What about at wide receiver? We talked about a couple of the big names. Any other big names you're making sure to get in, like Antonio Brown?
I mean, yeah, you know, like I love Antonio.
I feel like he's been such a forgotten man this season because he had a little bit of a slow start.
Yeah, you know, and maybe he carries some momentum from his massive game last week. But Adam Thielen, like, you got to keep riding that train, man. Like,
for sure.
I mean, double digit targets every week,
100 yards.
100 yards every week. I believe there was some, like, next gen stat about him. Oh, he leads the league in first. As being the first look, man, what podcast was I listening to? I want to give them credit for it. Oh, I think it was the DFS MVP with TJ Hernandez and whoever it was on this week. But yeah, like I I'm butchering what they called it. It's like the first look. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like the quarterback's first read. Somehow they can identify who the first read is. And he's leading the NFL in being the most first read receiver.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, Diggs has had his moments, but Thielen's been the one dominating that
wide receiver. You know, like Arizona is scary. They're not a good football team. You know, or at least not a good coached football team. And that said, I do think that that defense is still, you know, a force to be reckoned with. I know that defenses don't matter. However, I think that
they're good on outside receivers.
Right. Yes. This is not a plus. So guys, do not jam in Laquon Treadwell into your lineups. Do you hear me?
Well, there goes my builds. I got to start from scratch.
I know. I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry. But yeah, you know, like Adam Thielen, I'm definitely liking. I mean, AJ Green can eat that pathetic Steelers secondary up for sure. You know, and then, you know, in these high total games, I said it last week, and I'm going to say it again. In these massive high total games, I mean, one of the best things to do, at least to differentiate yourself a bit, it may not be like the most, you know, optimal way to approach it, but one of the best things to do, you know, if you're running multiple lineups, is just jamming in a bunch of the lower price guys in those games. So Mohamed Sanu, you know, Deshaun Jackson, Calvin Ridley, you know.
Yeah, like people are just going to be thinking about Ridley's, you know, touchdowns, his 3-touchdown game, and the other games he scored touchdown. They're just going to forget about Mo Sanu and what he can do underneath.
Absolutely.
And I mean, they're both good plays, but like Sanu should give you a little bit of safety where Ridley. Yeah.
And then one more guy that I'm in love with this week that I think will go very low owned. He is a bit banged up, but I think it's just they're maintaining his health, is DeAndre Hopkins against Buffalo. Buffalo is, according to Scott Barrett, last year he highlighted Keenan Allen going against Buffalo because they're very susceptible against you know, middle of the field, underneath routes. Mm-hmm. Among other routes, you know, but that's one of their most susceptible routes. And he runs a high percentage of routes that Buffalo is weak against. You know, I know that they're factoring in now Kiki Kuti and, you know, obviously Will Fuller is
healthy. Yeah, Will Fuller more than Hop.
Mm-hmm. But I do like Hopkins as an ultra talented ownership pivot off of guys like Antonio and you know, AJ, yeah, and Mike Evans. I mean, but Julio, goddamn, man, like I'm just so ready for a 200-yard 2-touchdown game. Yep.
I do like Juju Smith-Schuster in that Steelers Bengals game. I think who is it that plays the slot for the Bengals? Denard. I think he's been pretty bad this season. He's like a very rigid corner, and he's just stuck in the slot because they've got three guys that should be on the outside. Juju could eat him up. Other guys I'd like. I'm really high on Smokey John Brown. Leads the league in air yards. Like we talked about, those are things that are pretty predictable week to week. So he's finally like getting solid targets to go along with the air yards, even though he only caught 4 passes last week. He had 14 targets. So the Titans, you can beat them deep. Their defense is also getting more credit than I think it deserves right now. They've played some fairly mediocre opponents. You know, all of last year, they were just like an ATM versus number one wide receivers, guys that could beat you deep. Kenny still scored 2 touchdowns against them in week one this year. So John Brown, Ravens, I love his price. I love his upside. Any other receivers that I'm pretty high on? Like you mentioned, you got to get some Rams going with Goff if you're going to go that route. I think that's going to go very low owned given the whole no fly zone reputation, even though right now it's a fly zone.
Yeah. Yeah. And earlier in the week, man, and one thing that closed up, and you correct me if I'm wrong, all three of the Rams receivers are going to play. They're healthy, right?
So they haven't, the Cooks and Kupp need to get through the concussion protocol 100% to be cleared, but they were doing like their limited individual drills and stuff, which like is the step before getting cleared. So Sean McVay came out and said, you know, I fully expect them to be cleared if they continue to progress, which basically means like, hey, they're playing Sunday.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's very certain that they're all going to play. But, you know, on Tuesday, when I'm like driving to work and sitting in traffic, I'm making lineups. And Monday and Tuesday, Josh Reynolds was my guy. Yep. And I was really, I mean, I don't want to say I was disappointed to see
right.
that Cup and Cooks are going to play. Like, I want to see them play. I love that offense. I'm rooting for the Rams after they have been exorcised from Jeff Fisher's evil spirit. But I would love to see Josh Reynolds get a start and show his skill because he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on in case one of them does have a setback. A guy who is a pay down you could use in his place would be Tyler Boyd. Not quite his salary, but Boyd's been getting really solid targets, at least 7 targets in his last 4 games. And given the attention that the Steelers are likely to pay A.J. Green, Boyd can do his thing underneath give you a nice line there. You know, touchdown is a bit of a coin flip, but he should give you some catches and yardage.
Yeah, and then we didn't even mention Chris Godwin at 5,900 in that.
I'm going back and forth on Godwin. Like, I love the talent. He's been so, like, they keep messing with his role and like using Adam Humphries, and I get Humphries has his usefulness in an NFL offense, but like, you just want Godwin to be unleashed.
Yeah, it's going to happen at some point. Like,
the big and strong, fast.
You know, not look back. But I do agree with you that like Adam Humphries is kind of like you know, hovering back there. You know,
they just use him so much.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap with some tight ends, Fern. We mentioned it's a bit of a meat grinder as usual this season. What are you liking at tight end?
Yeah, so if I had to pick, gun to my head, Hooper or Brait, it would easily be Hooper. I just think that he is really coming into his own in this offense. I do think that, you know, if Julio does what I and many people think he will do and just feasts on Sunday, that's not going to be good news for Hooper, because I think, you know, when Julio feasts, you know, it all just bottlenecks through him. You know,
I can see
him getting like a 15 or 20 target game. Because he just destroys Tampa Bay, and I just don't see any reason why they wouldn't just pepper him with targets on Sunday. So, you know, Hooper, according to UF Collective, wow. Okay, so he's the number one owned tight end for them as of now. But like I said, and I'm going to say it again, like, it is an easy pivot for me off these guys, because of the volatility of tight end. So other than Eric Ebron, I'll just throw you 2 tight ends that interest me. The first one is David Njoku. I think that, you know, anyone who plays fantasy football for many years knows that a rookie quarterback's best friend is a big bodied tight end, and Njoku is not only big bodied, he's a freakish athlete as well. And he's getting a lot of targets now that Baker's in there.
Yeah, he's definitely more involved.
I like him a lot. And then, one guy that I feel like he's due for a blow up game here soon is Jordan Reed. And this is not my Redskins bias coming through. It's just he's an elite talent at tight end. And if he was on another team, you know, right now the Redskins offense, I don't want to say it's broken. It's just really freaking boring.
Yep. He's the most likely person to catch a receiving touchdown.
Yes. That's
especially if Chris Thompson doesn't go.
Right. Yes. So yeah, I mean,
do you have any news on Thompson, by the way?
I do not. I don't want to say that I don't want to speculate, but he was really banged up after that game, and early in the week it didn't look good. Let's see what's going on right now. Just on a quick Google search. I mean, you know, questionable Adrian Peterson and Chris Thompson questionable. Yeah. If Adrian Peterson and Chris Thompson missed the game, I don't even know what to think.
Capri Bibbs time.
Capri Bibbs.
Get out the Capri Suns. Bibbs
had that garbage time touchdown.
Yeah, he did. It sounds like AP's going to go. Like he was practicing limited, and like it was a pain tolerance thing, I believe, with the shoulder. But
yeah, he's a tough guy. Yeah, you know,
Jordan Reed. I like Reed a lot as a guy who could score a touchdown or even two touchdowns, because when he goes off.
And I have one more guy, but I don't want to steal your thunder.
All right, I'll hit mine real quick.
And I don't even know if you're going to say him. So if you don't say him, then
So I like Trey Burton a lot. I don't think the Dolphins are good versus tight ends. I think they can take away some receiving options on the outside, and the Bears are starting to get Burton more involved. Being on the road, it's not a great spot, and that game's going to be kind of yucky with the pace the Dolphins play. But still, like you said, there's not much out there option-wise. The other one I would point out would be CJ Uzomah. Tyler Eifert got hurt 2 weeks ago. Tyler Croft is in a walking boot apparently this week. So even if he is able to play, like, you wouldn't expect him to be very involved. So Uzomah is a good athlete. And if he's getting the full run at tight end, the Steelers have been really bad against tight ends this year. Another kind of outlet option on the Bengals if AJ Green gets blanketed.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt that John Ross might not play too. So that's just one less mouth to feed.
But were either of those a guy you were going to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's Jared Cook, man. Jared Cook, baby. I honestly, like, you know, I just try to go through narratives sometimes. And I said that going across the pond, you know, in a foreign environment, you know, a lot of travel, fatigued. Just give the damn ball to your running back. Let Chris Carson ball out. And I don't think that is the Raiders' MO. I could see the Seahawks just running the ball down the Raiders' throats. I feel like the Raiders, it would be smart of them to just let Derek Carr pepper, you know, their big body tight end, and just let him kind of, you know, work down through the 20s, and I could see him having a double digit target day. So I'm interested in Jared Cook as a tight end pivot. He is expensive. He's just $100 less than the slate leading Eric Ebron. Can you believe that, Mike? Did you ever think you'd see the day where Eric Ebron was the most expensive tight end on a main slate?
Not at all. That tells you everything you need to know about the tight end position in 2018.
Followed by Jared Cook, with right behind them is Jordan Reed and Kyle Rudolph. So there you go. Your top four tight ends for the week: Eric Ebron, Jared Cook, Jordan Reed, Kyle Rudolph, salary-wise, top four tight ends. And that, my friends, is the reason why you want to pivot at tight end, in my opinion. Yep.
Because get weird with it.
We just don't have the Ertz or the Kelsey. You know, I don't even want to say Gronk. I'm just going to say Ertz and Kelsey. We just don't have Ertz and Kelsey this week and in the main slate. And yes, it's so tempting to go to the chalk because it's like, oh, this Atlanta and Tampa Bay game is a can't miss. But guys, we're talking about tight ends. We're not talking about top receivers here.
Right. That's a great point about fading these guys.
Yes. Thank you.
All right.
What about defense other than the Bears? Is there anyone that's interesting to you?
The Cowboys, I'm a little bit interested in.
Yeah, me too. I like that.
You know, they're really cheap. The Browns, I don't hate. They're only a little bit more. Yeah, tough week for defense, though. It's been such a hard year to pick defenses.
Yeah, you just got to target those teams that they're getting sacked a lot. You know, that the quarterbacks are getting pressured a lot. And, you know, I the Dolphins play at such a low pace. Adam Gase is full of shit and said that they're going to play at like 70 yeah, plays. Like
double.
Whatever. What was it? 70 plays or something in the preseason?
Yeah.
That? And what are they playing at now? Like 52?
Right. It's funny because they actually run no huddle. Like one of the top five rates. They just don't hurry up. Like
That is so bizarre.
They get to the line and they stand there for 25 seconds.
Yeah, that's like leading the league in like fast breaks and like basketball. And then as soon as you get down there, you like run a Division II college offense and you're passing it around and shooting it with 1 second left on the shot clock. Like, come on, like you're running the hurry up. Let's go, you know. And for Christ's sake, get Kenyon Drake in there, guys. Come on. I know Frank Gore needs to have his like most games started in a row record continued, and that's cool. But Kenyon Drake, just get the ball to the man. Come on, feed him. Let's go. Yeah.
The other defense I do have some interest in is the Ravens. On the road, it's a little tougher, but the Titans, they've been a train wreck this season despite their record, especially on offense. Mariota can throw some picks when he's not right. Who knows if he can grip a football at this point. So,
and I got one last one for you, and then we can go in any direction you want. After this, is according to UF Collective's ownership, guess who the lowest owned defense is slated to be? The Chargers against Cleveland. That's interesting to me. I know that the Chargers
turned it over a little bit.
I know that they've been scuffling. I know. And I know that Joey Bosa is still out, but like they're facing a rookie quarterback. And I do believe that the Browns are a middle of the road team when it's all said and done. And they've got a bright future ahead of them if they can get a coaching staff that is, you know, in the 21st century. I mean, they got some talent, but the idea that the Chargers would be the lowest owned defense, you know, I don't know. Like, they've been pretty bad.
They were top five coming into the year in most people's eyes.
Right. So, and it's only week six. Like, things can turn around. So, just keep that in mind. That said, ownership with defense, like quarterback, is extremely flat. So, just because they're the lowest owned defense doesn't really mean too much.
Yep. Yeah. So, that's what I got this week. Anything else you got, Fern?
No, I apologize. I keep forgetting to update my part of the cheat sheet. I promise I'm going to do it. Because I got some takes this week, Michael. I got some takes.
Yeah, this is the week for it, man. You know what I went back and read was the piece you put out at the beginning of last season about mixing ownerships, you know, by how many lineups you want to put in. Because I feel like it's a good week to capitalize on doing some extra lineups because it's just – it's a little bit of a shit show, kind of like last week. There's a few good spots. So just build around like some Falcons. And I feel like, you know, you can maximize your return this week with some good thinking and staying out of some traps.
Yeah. And one more thing I want to say, and it's kind of like a pep talk to anybody out there that, you know, hasn't cashed yet this year or maybe he's just struggling a bit, is this year has been Chalk City.
Yep.
And for those of you watching this show, like if you're sitting here watching this live or you just watch us at all, like odds are you are a DFS degenerate. Odds are that you play fantasy pretty seriously, and odds are because of that you try to get really creative in your lineup construction. You know, you're not just like on Sunday morning reading some like generic article and just jamming in the chalk. The chalk is killing it this year, and this is the time of year where that begins to change. When the injuries start piling up, when coaches start changing up their schemes and, their hierarchies of who gets the targets and who gets the touches, this is when the diligent people who think for themselves start winning big money. And so just hold strong. It's only week six. And now that these bye weeks are coming, this is where you're going to get your edge.
Yeah, the league catches up.
Absolutely.
So, all right, Fern, thanks for joining me. Everybody, good luck this week.
All right, Mikey. Take care, pal.
Take care.